Okay, hello everyone, and welcome back to HQ Overtime, the official post-game show for Raptors HQ, SB Nation's Raptors team site. We had some technical difficulties off the top, so I'm just going to do a full reset here and give you the whole intro again. My name's obviously John Godis, HQ author Dan Grant's here with me, and we're going to talk about Game 1 of the East semifinal between the Raptors and Heat. As always, you can submit your questions for us either in the comments of our post-game show article at RaptorsHQ.com or by tweeting at RaptorsHQ and myself at John Godis. Mixlr app, it's on iOS or Android. If you've been tuning in before, you know all that. Dan, I would go into anything else about this game, but we have to start by talking about that shot that Lowry made at the end of the fourth quarter. What was going through your mind when he put the shot up and when it actually went in?
Yeah, honestly, I was standing up in my living room and I was trying to get ready to run over here to call you because I thought that this was over. And when he pulled up at half court to take the shot, I yelled some things that I'm not going to repeat. Because I thought they had obviously they didn't have that much more time, but when you're trying to, you know, tie the game, you got 3 seconds. You should be able to get the ball at least over half court. And when he drilled it, I just couldn't believe it. Like, especially the fact that it was Lowry, first of all, given the playoffs and the game that he just had, airballing that three-pointer in the fourth. And the fact that it was nothing but net was just insane. Like, I still can't even believe that it happened.
Yeah, if you were godforsaken and missed this shot, we're going to play it for you here so you can hear the audio. Dan, you won't be able to hear it on your end, but sure. I'm just going to play it because you can't not play it when you're discussing this game, and we'll get into everything else in a moment here. But this was the shot that Lowry made to force the game to go into overtime.
They need a three to tie. Lowry, half-court heave, a prayer at the buzzer. Oh! Kyle Lowry! Toronto.
He just launches this thing from half court, and you had said it. It's he hadn't made like a single shot for like a week, and the one shot that he makes is from 35-40 feet out. It was just incredible. But it did play part of a larger story here, and Lowry's struggles really hurt the team overall tonight, despite making that shot to force it go a little bit longer. What kind of hope do you have, Dan, for him getting his jump shot back at some point in this series? Because it's just deserted him altogether.
Yeah, it's been unbelievable. I know I've heard you talk about it on a few of these other podcasts about, you know, I think everyone, we were just assuming that he must be injured because how does someone who shot so well this season from three, I believe he set a career high in three-point percentage this year. He took over seven threes a game and he was making about 40%. Just totally, totally lose his shot. It's just unreal. So if it is a mental thing, I saw some promising signs, maybe not with the jump shot, but just with him in the fourth quarter, you know, when he got that offensive rebound, when he was showing a little bit of fire, because before that, they talked about it on the broadcast, his body language was just horrendous, which is so un-Kyle Lowry-like that it was kind of jarring to see because, I mean, at the end of the day, he's the Raptors' best player. DeMar DeRozan can be the best player on a given night, but for at least this season, night in and night out, he's the guy who covers up a lot of the holes. And a lot of the holes you're seeing on offense were things that you didn't see during the season because Kyle Lowry would hit a transition three or Kyle Lowry would cover it up in some other way. So you really were going to need him to at least be passable, to be a threat. Because otherwise, if you're Miami, why would you even cover him? Like, yeah, he doesn't look like...
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's been talk about playing Corey Joseph and having Kyle Lowry come off the bench. But, I mean, Lowry in 42 minutes, he was 3 for 13, just 7 points, and didn't make much of an impact, or as much as you would like to see moving the ball either with just 6 assists and 4 rebounds. I thought the best part of him making that shot was that he kind of gave the bench this smile, like, that's the one that went in. Like, yeah. it was funny in the moment because you thought that things were kind of turning around, but then, you know, overtime happened. And maybe we could talk about that a little bit. What exactly fell apart for the Raptors in overtime, or really was just a continuation of everything minus the Lowry shot. But Dwayne Wade just kind of took over, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it was not funny, but not ha-ha funny. Just to start overtime after that, you know, the building erupts when that goes on. And then the first three baskets in a row, Johnson, Wade, Deng. And these guys have seen it, you know. These guys are guys who are not afraid in the playoffs. I mean, I know that's a hyperbole, but these are guys who have tons and tons of playoff experience. They said on the broadcast as well before the game, they showed the Miami Heat's, you know, playoff games played. It's over 600 when you combine the whole team. And the Raptors is down around 250, 260, I think. So these guys, even though that, you know, unbelievable momentum, I'm doing air quotes, momentum swinging thing happens, just didn't care. They were totally unfazed. And at the end, yeah, obviously Wade was just, he's Dwayne Wade. I mean, he's got three titles, you know, he won one before LeBron even got there. So, you know, he's 34, and I think a lot of people, he's one of those guys that every year you expect him to fall off, but when the game matters, he's there. So finished, I think he finished 24 points, 6 rebounds, and it's scary to be across the floor from him.
Yeah, and he kind of had a quiet night with Dragic playing so well next to him, and we'll talk a little bit more about that backcourt tandem in a moment here. I thought that Wade was special down the stretch. He's been great late in games throughout this series. He's just been really good this whole season. It's kind of like the knee problems that were such an issue over the last 3 or 4 years have just kind of disappeared for him. He's got more lift than he used to. He's always been comfortable in his own body, and that's one of my favorite things to watch, because we all kind of breathed a sigh of relief that we didn't have to play Paul George anymore. But just because Dwayne Wade is a little bit older doesn't mean he's not going to be a challenge. It's a different animal. I think I mentioned it on the Headquarters podcast, but it presents a different challenge for guys like Norman Powell because he's so smart with the ball, because he's so crafty getting in the lane. He makes the right decision when he passes it. We saw that a lot tonight. And even though the Heat shooters weren't jacking it up as much as they were, they shot 73% on the three-point shots. Like, they were 8 of 11 to the Raptors, 5 for 21. So if you want to look at something that kind of decided this game, you could say it was the three-point line. But for the Heat side, that's just coming back to Wade. Like, he always makes the right decision when passing and starting the ball movement for that team. Let's pivot a little bit to Dragic and his night. 26 points on 10 of 20 shooting. He was a plus 13. That was the team best for the Heat. 6 rebounds, 2 assists. They did not want to see Goran Dragic go off like this, because you did not want to see the Game 7 Dragic from the Charlotte series return and continue, because when both those two guys are going in the backcourt, when both Dragic and Wade are scoring the ball like they did tonight, they combined for 50 points. The team is just phenomenal. Like, the Heat are that team that could challenge the Cavaliers. What did you see in Dragic?
You saw, I mean, if you're a Raptors fan, you saw everything you don't want to see, because he made 3 three-pointers, and that's, you know, if Dragic is making 3-pointers, then you're screwed, basically, because he's so smart with the ball. He's so smart in traffic. He can create. He's not like, you know, a typical point in that he creates, you know, 8 and 10 assists a game. I mean, that's not typical. That's elite. But, you know, he only had 2 assists tonight, but he was creating so much for everyone around him and just burying shots. And he's a guy that, I don't know why it happens to him so much, but sometimes he just disappears. He just falls off, and he has, you know, a 12.3 rebound night. You don't see him. And tonight, like you said, he was the focus more than Wade. They showed a graphic I was watching at the end of the game, and they showed, you know, I think at the time Dragic had 24 and 6. I scored another basket after that, but Wade had 17. And like you'd said, I didn't see Dwayne Wade score 17 points.
Yeah.
So yeah. It just happened, and then obviously overtime happened. So when those two guys are doing that, it's going to be a tough road to hoe for the Raptors, because Lowry, I guess, is the one who guards Dragic, but you can't guard 3-pointers. Like, you can't guard him if they're going in from a guy like that, because you want him to shoot that shot. And if he's making it, then, I mean, it's a difficult task.
Yeah, at one point he wasn't shooting that well from outside, but it kind of snowballed towards the end of the game as kind of the game went on. Joseph is going to get a lot of time seeing Dragic. Lowry's going to see a lot of time on Dragic. Lowry had to be better on the defensive end, I thought. There was that one play late in the game where he gambled down on Whiteside for the Dragic three in the corner. Just a terrible decision defensively. If he was going to break up that Whiteside dump off, that would have been great, but I'd never thought that was the first option on that play. I think Wade was looking the short corner the whole time. Lowry, when he gambles like that, tends to get into trouble. He does some good things, creating havoc, and maybe he was trying to push a little bit because he wasn't impacting the game as he usually would on the offensive end. But yeah, it was one of those plays where you just kind of watch it back and you're disappointed, but that's kind of just the plays that he tries to make.
Miami wants you to gamble, though, right? That's the thing. They're such a team of pros that they want you to take that chance because they're going to make you pay. I get, like you said, that Lowry might have been pressing because he was a little bit worried about how he's impacting the game, but you can't play into their hands.
Yeah, for sure. Kind of moving on that topic a little bit and talking about Whiteside. They never really seem to attack him that well. And I mean, the Raptors, they never seem to want to go at Whiteside that much tonight. They looked for the most part afraid of him in the lane. When they did attack him, they tended to get good results. I think I tweeted something out about this. It was, you get into his body, you can draw fouls. They didn't do a great job of that tonight. They just kind of avoided him at all costs. Whiteside played, 39 minutes. And I think if he's playing that much and being that much of a deterrent, there's just not much the Raptors are going to be able to do on the inside. What are your thoughts about how they can maybe attack Whiteside a little bit better or just play to get him out of the game a little bit more as this series goes on?
Yeah. It's interesting with him because, I mean, obviously he had that knee scare earlier in the game. Looking at it now, to see the fact that he played almost 40 minutes is pretty wild, considering he went off for however long he went off when that happened. Going at him is difficult because he's just such a mountain. And he loves to, be a help defender, and he loves to block shots on the weak side. Lowry is too small to go right at him. And I think you saw DeRozan a couple times. He's been doing something that he didn't do very much during the regular season, which is just drive into a crowd of three people. And if one of those three people is Hassan Whiteside, you're not really going to have much luck. It's surprising to me that they didn't have more success against him, given what a good game Jonas had.
Yeah.
I guess a lot of his points, and especially in the first half, he got a few transition buckets and some tip-ins and things like that. But I think Whiteside himself did a pretty good job of or contesting those without fouling, because he only had three fouls, which is uncharacteristic of him. I think he was near the league leaders in fouls in the league on the year. And it's going to be tough. I think one way you could get him off the court, and this is something I thought about before the season, and before the game, and I don't know if it's something that even would work, but play a five-man lineup with Patterson at the five and just get him right out of there. You could give it a shot anyway. They went small to start this game anyway. So if you saw about Patterson for Jonas, I don't know who Whiteside would guard. But then obviously I think on the flip side of the ball, that's going to create a whole new set of issues. So
yeah,
that's one thing you might want to try in spurts. But I mean, that's it for me. I think you have to go right at him. You can't be afraid of him. Like you said, if he's changing those shots the way that he did today, it's going to be, again, tough. I mean, the Raptors today on offense did not play well enough to win. And if they're going to play the same way they did today, I mean, it's just not going to work out. So,
yeah, I thought the Whiteside thing was interesting. He was a deterrent at the rim, but their rotations were interesting because he would aggressively help, as he does, when DeRozan drove it to the basket. And it was mostly DeRozan and not Lowry. But when DeRozan made that dump off pass to Valanciunas, the guys who were rotating to him, it was either usually Deng or Johnson, were kind of hedging Valanciunas out towards the box area and forcing him to take these kind of Jimmy jump shots from like the 7-foot range.
Yeah.
And he made them for a little bit, but down the stretch of the game, you could see like his legs were going a little bit. He wasn't making them. That was just like, observations. I'm sure there's stats that'll say that he was just as good at down the stretch, but It was interesting. It was interesting how they rotated on that. I think the Raptors still need to try to do that on as many possessions as possible, because if Jonas can catch it and do something at the basket, I think that's your ideal situation, because he's so good down underneath the hoop.
Just add on to that. Sorry, I went to the Toronto Miami game back the last time they played, and Wade was out, but that was what they did to him. They did a very similar thing, and they got him out of the game. I think he had 5 fouls in that game, and they were doing very similar things, dish offs to Valanciunas, where it was DeRozan and Lowry both just doing handoffs, where they were drawing him over as a help defender, and that it worked. I mean, he had a decent game, but that worked. So if that's something that they can do, like you said, I think they can't abandon it, because you can't just let him run amok out there.
Yeah. So one more thing I wanted to get to, actually a couple more things here. I want to talk about Terrence Ross as well, because how could you not? He scored baskets tonight. We're going to get to people's questions right after that, though. So if you want to tweet them in, you can tweet them right to me at John Godes, JohnGaudes. We'll get to those in about 5 minutes here. The topic I wanted to get to before that were these kind of keys that I laid out in an earlier podcast about how you really have to go about beating the Heat. And the three things that you have to be worried about, I think, number one is Whiteside. You need to get him out of the game at some point. They mm-hmm. need to deter the three-point line, and they need to stop Dragic and Wade from driving. They didn't really do any of that effectively, though, in this game. I don't know what you thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with those 3 points. I mean, if you do those three things, I think you're going to be successful against the Miami Heat. And as you said, they didn't manage really to do anything. Like you said, Whiteside played 40 minutes. Wade and Dragic had fantastic games. And even though they didn't take many threes, they were 8 of 11. Like, an 8 of, that's an unbelievable percentage. It's crazy. I know on the season, I think the Heat's three-point shooting stats are not fantastic, but since the All-Star break, they're one of the best shooting teams in the league. They're 3-point percent.
Oh, so good, yeah.
Yeah, it's way up. They're 36.5% from three, and they were actually the NBA leader with almost 50% from the floor. So if they're going to be that efficient, you have to do something to make them work harder. And actually, they only shot 44% tonight, which is the same as Toronto, 44.9% both teams. So you did okay on the two-point shots, but as we all know, the Raps struggled to defend the three. They're 29th in the NBA defending the three this year. Which is, you know, not how you win in the playoffs. So
no,
yeah.
I don't know how that's going to normalize. But if they shoot 73% from the 3-point line, I don't know how long this series goes. I would expect it to go down maybe a little bit in game two. But they were very selective in this game. I thought they were all good 3-point shots. Like, they only took 11, and they made 8 of them, and that's always a good sign if you're looking for the 3-point shot. I know I'm kind of being a downer by saying these are the three things that you have to do, and they didn't do any of them. If you could pick one thing that comes back for the Raptors and maybe shows a little more promise in game two, other than the obvious, which is the eventual imminent return of Kyle Lowry's jump shot, what do you want to see as either an adjustment or just somebody playing better in game two?
I think they just need to move the ball. We saw, you know, it's funny. The same things happen with this team. It's like, you know, when they say doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result is the definition of insanity. They start out by moving the ball fairly well. There's some great ball movement in the first half. Especially speaking of Terrence Ross, he made a couple really nice passes. One in the corner for Damari Carroll 3-pointer. When it was moving around the perimeter, and even if Lowry's not shooting those shots, that's how they can affect the game. And then that stopped. It just went away. And you can't go ISO against this team. They're going to do it to you, because that's what they do. But I like DeMar's game. I thought he came out aggressive. But those fadeaways, like, there was that one, I think it was in the first half, second quarter, where he had Dragic on the baseline and he took a turnaround fadeaway jump shot. Like, you can't do that. You got to bully that guy. If you're not going to have one of their elite perimeter defenders on you, you got to take advantage of that opportunity, because they don't come over and over again. So I think just in general, they just need to keep moving the ball.
And polar opposite to that, there was a play later in the game where he had Hassan Whiteside switched on him and he tried a fadeaway jump shot over like the, what is he, like an 8 foot wingspan guy? Like, if you get a mismatch, I think DeMar has to be smarter about taking advantage of it. Like you said, if it's a smaller guy, you can bully him, continue to bully him, get further onto the block and take an easier shot. And if it's Whiteside, I think you should see then that someone else is not being guarded by, right, you know, a physical freak specimen. So you should probably pass that person the ball. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I just said he's the blue monster in Space Jam 2.
He is the blue monster. Woodley said he does have a bit of Sean Bradley in him. I think he's got better hands than Bradley did.
Oh, but, definitely. Yeah, it's probably an insult to Hassan Whiteside a little bit. But, you know,
he's really tall.
He is insanely tall, yeah.
We could talk about DeRozan more. I think there are some questions about DeMar here. I want to briefly talk about Terrence Ross, though. Went from zero to, you know, semi-hero tonight. I think he had a really critical turnover with Dwayne Wade stealing the ball. He tried to okey-doke Dwayne Wade with the dribble, which is, you know, I think the Raptors had two turnovers trying to do that late in the game, so hopefully they'll learn their lesson on that against one of the best players all time at stealing it. But other than that, Terrence Ross was pretty good, and they needed him to be good. Mm-hmm. 19 points on 7-13. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could talk a little bit about what you saw from him.
Yeah, I mean, he came out ready to play, which was awesome, because he did not show up in the last series at all, to the point that – and I love Norman Powell, but if a rookie comes in and takes your minutes in the first round, like in the playoffs, I mean, you obviously there's a problem, because Dwayne Casey – has given Ross every chance to succeed. He does, you know, even when he struggles and does Terrence Ross like things, which are both good and bad, he still, you know, his minutes would stay reasonably consistent during the season. So the fact that he came out and he was ready to go was great. He was aggressive. I mentioned earlier he made that, you know, he was making passes. I was watching the game with my wife and she watches casually and she said, like, Ross was, I can't believe that, you know, he actually made that pass instead of forcing up the contested three. So even
it says it all.
But then you mentioned the play where he tried to, you know, okey-doke Dwayne Wade. That was Terrence Ross in a nutshell to me, because he made a fantastic play to get that ball and he used all his incredible athleticism and then made a boneheaded decision right after. So it was just like a little, you know, a little snippet of why that guy is so frustrating for Raptors fans at times. But, I mean, as you said, on the whole, it was a really nice bonus to get a really good game out of him.
Yeah, Terrence Ross has a bit of the same ilk of DeMar DeRozan, too, where when they believe in themselves, they really believe in themselves, and that can be a deterrent at times. But you can't argue with 19 points. If they're getting around 20 points from Terrence Ross off the bench, I think you live with a few of those boneheaded mistakes.
Sure.
Hopefully that continues. If they continue to start Norman Powell, then I think we'll see a lot more of Ross this series, for better or for worse. So that'll definitely be interesting. I'm sure we'll talk more about Terrence Ross in future games. I'm going to jump in here and start looking at some listener questions here. We got a few of them to get to. A few of them were pretty funny, actually, so we'll get to those. David Mancidian tweeted in, "Why must we do iso ball so much in crunch time?" I'll let you handle that one.
Yeah, I don't know, David. We shouldn't, because, you know, the way that the team gets back into games and the way that they make their offensive runs is when they get out in transition. It's when they move the ball side to side, as we mentioned earlier. I think because DeMar DeRozan is comfortable playing iso ball, or because Kyle Lowry right now is not shooting the ball well, they feel like that's their fallback, but I don't know why you wouldn't run just some kind of basic offense and try to get a corner three or try to get something in the pick and roll. I don't get it either. So I don't know why it continues to happen when it just obviously doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean, the late game play calls have not been Dwayne Casey's strong suit, but it's kind of the cards he's dealt too, because DeMar DeRozan, like you said, he likes to go ISO. He likes to make those kind of plays. Their pick and roll plays usually aren't that creative, I've noticed. I don't know if you've noticed that too. Usually it's just one at the top and then whatever, how the cards may fall after that, you know?
It's the same pick and roll we run in my men's league. It's like, it's not, you know what I mean? It's just, you either shoot a floater or you throw it up for Jonas, and you hope that's it. Like, there's not really much kicking it to the corners or slashers trailing or anything. It's just the two man. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, it usually gets stuffed. So,
yeah, that was a good question, though. We've got Anthony Doyle here. Why were Ross and JV on the bench for the last 2 minutes? I think this was pre-overtime, so I think this is the last 2 minutes of the fourth quarter. So anyway, this makes sense. Well, it did make sense because Lowry made a shot from half court. but Ross, I don't know. Like Ross, I'm not sure that you need Ross in the game for the last 2 minutes because, like you said, they're not kicking the ball to him. Mm-hmm. And he tends to not make great decisions with any amount of pressure. It was funny. He was taking those free throws. I'm not sure if they were in fourth quarter or overtime. I think they were in overtime because he had to miss the last one or hit it, and then they had to foul immediately. He had that look in his eyes, like that 30 for 30 with Reggie Miller where John Starks is at the line, and he wanted no part of those free throws.
He was gone off the screen for such a long time that, again – I'll bring my wife into this. She was like, does he know that he has to shoot free throws right now?
Yeah.
And he came back. I don't know if he was trying because the Raptors didn't have a timeout. So maybe he was going to talk to Casey, but he was gone for a really long time.
Another interesting Ross moment late in this game is Casey went to talk to him before that Whiteside free throw that led up to the Lowry three. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure Casey told him to delay the game in the least delay of game possible because the ball came down. Whiteside hit the free throw, and Ross just stuck out his foot, so the ball went off his foot and into like the side, the crowd off to the side. And I'm pretty sure that was on purpose, just so that they could get a few seconds, so to get down the court. So I thought that was a nice little trickery by Dwayne Casey and Ross there. David Mann, CDN, a question here. This is the Raptors' ugliest game of the year. Agree? Do you agree?
I guess it depends on your definition of ugly. They were in the game. I think game six against Indiana was a hell of a lot uglier. And that was just 2 games ago. So I disagree.
They've all seemed pretty ugly so far in the playoffs. I think that first quarter was ugly just because the Raptors have been playing ugly and because the teams were kind of feeling each other out. Mm-hmm. It was definitely at times tonight, like, okay, guys, just settle down a little bit on both sides. Like, both teams didn't look settled for long stretches of the time. But yeah, you're right. We've seen uglier games just from defensive standpoints, like in the Pacers series. It was just ugly for different reasons. You could say it was maybe good ugly.
I was going to say, ugly doesn't necessarily mean bad. But yeah, you were right. Both teams seemed like they were just, to use a baseball metaphor, they were just gripping the bat a little tight. I think I tweeted that a middle school scrimmage had broken out at the ACC at one point because it was just, I mean, Jonas jacking 20-footers and, like, I don't know what was going on in that first quarter, as you said. That's not good ugly. That's the bad kind of ugly. But ugly is such a versatile word.
I thought the first quarter was good ugly because it was like, okay, both these teams are going to play the way the Raptors want to play, which is unpredictable. It didn't turn out that way in the end, but it was a close game. They just didn't have, whatever they needed to have in overtime. TH tweets in, is this the most Raptors loss ever? This team is unbelievable. This was like, it's up there. If we could talk about like upper echelon typical Raptors games, I think Kyle Lowry, after missing a billion shots, hitting a half-court shot to tie the game, send it into overtime, and then the team completely shits the bed for 5 minutes. I think that's up there for like the most Raptors moments everywhere. I don't know what you think.
It's almost like a microcosm of Raptors history. It's just like, something that's supposed to be good being disappointing and then giving you hope and then snatching that hope away and then just destroying it. So, I mean, luckily we have more games that we can play the series. If this game had happened in a game 7, then yeah, that's the most Raptors game in Raptors history. But I definitely see his point.
Russell Peddle tweeted in, there are oddly plenty of positives, to take away from this game. Updated series predictions. This is a good question. Why don't you go first?
I didn't make an official series prediction. My official series prediction was to passers-by on the street. Was either the Heat were going to just eviscerate us, or the Raptors were going to win a hard-fought series. And I think, like Russell said, the fact that this was such a close game, even though we didn't play particularly well, actually does bode well for Toronto. We obviously need to get the next one before we go back into Miami, and that's going to be a task because this is such a, you know, professional, experienced Heat team. But yeah, I think that there are some positives. My updated series prediction, I'm still going to say Raptors in seven.
Yeah, I'm still Raptors in seven too, though. That, you know, we shit on the Miami crowd so much, but that's a tough place to play. Just yeah. Because their crowd gets into it when the team's playing well, and it seems like as they're shooting at 85% from the field, that it doesn't take much for them to just rip off like a 15-0 run. Like, they killed Charlotte on those types of runs. So I'm a little bit nervous about the Raptors stealing one on the road in this series, more so than in We the Gold in the last series. But I'm still holding true to the Raptors in seven pick. Sure. The last question is also from Edwin. I think it's there's a few others that are just not going to have time to get to them, unfortunately. But I think it's a good place to round this out. He asks, will Dragic's big game fire Lowry up to bounce back finally? We could generalize this even further. Is Lowry going to come back at some point in this series?
I mean, how do you know? I mean, you hope. He played 43 minutes tonight, which is, for how ineffective he was for a lot of the game, is pretty wild.
Plus seven, too. He was one of the two Raptors who were a plus in the plus minus.
Yeah, him and Jonas were both plus. So he's obviously doing things to keep him on the floor. I don't know what Lowry coming back means. Does it mean him being pre-All-Star, like, awesome Kyle Lowry? If you're hoping for that, I don't think it's going to happen. Do I think he can be more effective offensively? I think he could do that just by making better choices. Being aggressive when he's going to the basket. I mean, even if his elbow is broken, you can still go in and try to, you know, force things inside, not force things into going to into defenders or anything like that, but just go in tough and make plays in the paint rather than kind of cruising around around the perimeter and making quick passes. There was times tonight when he looked like he just didn't want the ball on his hands, and he's got to, you know, take more control of the game than that if he's not going to be a shooter.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, if we get 16 points on 40% shooting from Lowry, like, it's not his season average, but that would be such a huge bump in his production at this point that it would help this team so much. Do you think it's coming back sooner rather than later? Do you have any predictions just off the wall? Did the half-court shot maybe help his confidence? It has to help a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? It went down. And maybe this game is where he reached the "it can't get any worse" moment, and he'll just get out there and go. Like, I think I mentioned it before. When he airballed that three-pointer in the fourth quarter, that was right after he had had a couple nice plays where he was kind of looking a little more bouncy and aggressive. And it was just kind of like, can you give this guy a break? Like, let it hit front rim or something. Like, and maybe that's what he needed. Maybe he just needed to crater out in the bottom, and he's going to come back fired up for the next game. But in terms of a prediction, I think maybe you'll see some improvement next game, and then he's going to come out fired up to play in Miami.
Yeah, he could be better on the road too, and maybe that's something that's going to play into it. We are going to call it there, Dan. I appreciate you coming on. Hopefully we can extend this series and get you back on later on. Do you have anything coming down on the site in the next few days here?
I'll be writing the game preview for game 3. Obviously the tone of that will be largely dependent on game 2. So, I'll be obviously watching closely, and, go Raptors.
Yeah. Perfect segue. We will be back for game 2 of this series on Thursday. My guest is going to be Josh Priemski from At the Hive. We're going to pick his brain a little bit about what happened in the Charlotte series and maybe get some inside knowledge in the Miami Heat that we can pass on to Dwayne Casey. You can look for that in the post-game thread on RaptorsHQ.com or tune in from Twitter at RaptorsHQ. You can subscribe to archived episodes of this show and our weekly podcast, The Headquarters, on iTunes. If you give us a rating review there, it's greatly appreciated. Thanks to Dan Grant for joining me. And that is HQ Overtime, everyone. Thanks for tuning in.